and pray that the Lord works through the service and for God to bless Peter among us. I did want to say one thing for teenagers and children. In the next couple of weeks on a Sunday morning, we're going to have a baptism service. Now, baptism is when you say, I believe in Jesus and I want to follow him. Okay, and we have children sometimes who are about 7 who are baptized. We have folks who are baptized when they're 70. So if you want to follow Jesus and you want to let others know, I believe in him and I'm going to follow him with his help, I encourage you to be baptized. Talk to your parents about that or any adult around here or myself. That would be really great. It's not a question of whether you're good enough to be baptized. It's a question of whether you want to follow Jesus. And if you do, he says, be baptized as a sign of that. So we're excited about that. And Peter's going to talk to the children now. Thank you, Peter.
Sure. Hey, good evening. Wow, much younger crowd than last night. How's your week going? Good? So-so. Okay, my name is Peter, and I've actually been a missionary almost 19 years, like the pastor said, almost 20, and I've been in 3 countries, okay? Can anybody pick out the flag, Peru's flag here? This one? No? This one. Okay, you probably can't see what's on that flag, but it's the sun, okay? Uruguay has a sun on it. It's got a sun with, looks like a sand dollar or something, okay? But that's Uruguay's flag, all right? So we were talking last night about how one kid make a difference, one child make a difference. And we talked about that last night and how something was going on in Bolivia where one kid did make a difference. He helped out some of the street kids that shine shoes there. I just got a pair of sandals from one of those shoe shine boys. And I wanted to know if you could guess what these are made out of. Just, you can take it and pass it along. What do you think those are made out of? Rubber? Anything else? Yeah? No, be more specific. What kind of rubber? Where'd the rubber come from? Exactly. Yep, they're made out of tires, which really are pretty good things to make shoes out of. So, if you're ever looking for something to make shoes out of, think about rubber tires. I don't know, you'd have to talk to your dad about that, though, before you sliced up his tires. Huh? Rub a lot? Well, they're not, they kind of get conformity feet, but yeah, I guess you need tough feet. Anyway, so if one child can make a difference, I want to tell you just a little. Oh, before I get to that, this is soccer is a big thing in South America. So this is Ecuador's jersey. All right. We have jerseys from all over the place. Bolivia has a team. They all have teams. But you don't watch North American football in South America. You watch soccer. I've got a few things here from Uruguay because I want to tell you about how one kid made a difference in Uruguay, too. In Uruguay, we have a lot of cattle, and there's a lot of farming, ranches and stuff. And so I have some farming things with me, cattle things. This is, what do you think this is? You probably know, right? What?
The thing that makes the cattle move.
It actually is a horse whip. When you ride a horse, make something move, right? Well, it makes a horse move. Or it make you move. Or me. And so that's a whip. It's kind of nice. You just kind of do that. Yeah. It does hurt, actually. Get going, horsey. Yeah. And then I brought this along. This is called a facón. And it's a long knife. They use this knife quite a bit. Almost all the ranchers have this. And it's kind of a safety net for them in case they're out and they need to kill an animal quickly or something like that. And they're really crafty. They put it right here just like this, right between their belt. And so you can just grab it real quick. So it's pretty cool the way they do that. And I forgot to bring my boleto down, but have you seen the boleto on the table? Do you know what a boleto is? It looks like three balls on a, yeah? And that's what they use, kind of like a lasso. You can look at that when you go out the door. But anyway, so farming and ranching is a big thing in our country. And one of the things that I wanted to just, you know, tell you about tonight was in a farming area in Uruguay, we have a small church. It's kind of got a weird name. I love the name, Bichadero. Yeah, that's what it's called, Bichadero. Well, anyway, this town out in the middle of nowhere in a farming community, there's a small Alliance church. We've had that church there about 6 years or so. And we had a Billy Graham crusade in Uruguay about October of last year. And we haven't had a crusade like that, and they did a nationwide television program, broadcast of the crusade. Well, there were two kids in the Sunday school class at the Bichadero church. And their teacher was saying, invite people to your house so they can watch the crusade on TV. And so two of these guys in the Sunday school class, they were fifth and sixth graders. They said, I'm going to invite my teacher to my home to watch the crusade. And another boy said, I'm going to invite my parents because they would never watch a crusade. And so I'm going to ask if they could turn on the crusade that night. And all three of those people were saved. The teacher and the guy's parents, his mom and dad. So, can one child make a difference? You better believe it. You know, just think, there's three more people in the kingdom because two boys in fifth and sixth grade decided to invite their teacher and their parents to watch the crusade, and they were saved. So when you go today, I just want you to take this. You can, but let's see, before we do that, who does know what this flag goes to? Ever seen this flag before?
Peru.
Not Peru.
China?
No, you're not warm. Where do you think this flag is from? This is interesting. No idea?
Australia?
No idea?
She said Greece.
Greece? She said Greece. She said Greece. It's the Pennsylvania state flag. That's where we are, right? You didn't know that? There you go. No, well, maybe I'm not too good at painting. But anyway, so you can make a difference right here in Pennsylvania. Yeah? You don't have to go to Uruguay or Paraguay or any place like that. You can make a difference right here in your state. Okay? So please take one of these with you. You can look this over, put your name on the back, and fill it in when you made a difference for the Lord. Okay? Hey, thanks for coming tonight. God bless you. Now, we're going to look at a main presentation. This PowerPoint is called One Family, Two Countries. So it's about our high schoolers and what they do and where they live. So I don't know if you'd like the younger kids to stay in or not. Whoever makes that decision, it's up to you.
Yeah, why don't the kids stay for this presentation, then you'll be dismissed, okay? To the fellowship hall.
Good deal. Okay. Could you run that CD, that song? This is Keep Quito, Ecuador.
Cantamos para el gran yo soy, levántenos y subos con gozo al rey. Jesús es el Señor. Jesús es el Señor.
The idea behind that PowerPoint is that we live in two countries. We're 7 hours away from each other and by jet. But we get together 4 times a year, and my kids come south to Uruguay twice, and we go north to Ecuador twice. And so it's kind of a different lifestyle, but it's kind of fun. And my kids would say a lot of good things about being a missionary kid. So maybe you'll get to be a missionary kid someday, or maybe you'll get to be a missionary. Who knows? That might be in God's plan for you, too. Great. All right.
Amen. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, children, thank you. Club Knack for the Fellowship Hall. Off you go.
For the rest of you, we have a few questions. I want to see how much you've learned about Uruguay. So let's see question number one here. If we can. Okay, this is, you get 3 answers to guess from, so let's see what this says. If you see that your neighbor has a plastic bottle on the roof of his car or his hood, what does this mean? He wants the milkman to stop at his house for fresh milk. His car is for sale. He has work available for either a maid or a gardener. What do you think? Which one? You think it's A? Okay. He wants the milkman to stop. Nope. Yes. B. His car is for sale. You think? A bottle on the car? That's crazy. You're right. Good job. Yep, his car's for sale. And it doesn't matter what kind of bottle. If you see a bottle on a car in Uruguay, go ask for the price. Not of the bottle. Okay, next slide. Oh, you know, you gave me the clip. Here I am. Get used to all these modern conveniences. Okay. Okay. If you're invited to a baby shower in Uruguay, this is mainly for the ladies, you need to make sure that you bring what item in addition to a gift. Okay. You're going to bring a gift, right? But you also need to bring lipstick, B, a bouquet of fresh flowers, C, parenting advice to share with the new mother. What do you think? C, good thing to bring. Wrong. Yeah?
A.
A. Yeah, the craziest thing up there, right?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. Why would you take lipstick to a baby shower? Okay, this is the deal. Hang on. It's another culture, right? What they do at baby showers is they will blindfold the expectant mom, and she will pick up a gift, and she has to shake the gift, and she has to guess who brought it and what's in it, which is pretty much impossible, okay? And when she doesn't guess that, whoever brought the gift gets to come up to the expectant mom, and the mom has to lift up her shirt, and with the red lipstick, the gift bringer paints whatever she wants on her stomach. So, what do you think? Actually, it's a good idea for your next baby shower. I don't know. First time my wife went to a baby shower, I said to her, we're only in the country 2 days, and I said, do you think I should come with you? And she had no idea, you know, what was it about, and she said, no, why don't you stay here? She came back, and then she said, I'm so glad you didn't show up. And she also said she was really glad she didn't have any children in Uruguay. Okay, number three. Large bags of pine cones are sold on the side of the road in Uruguay, a certain time of year. What for? To make doorstops, to make decorations for the holidays, for fire starters. Yeah, we're cooking now, aren't we? Yep, it is fire starters. And I've often wondered, why did we go to logs and, you know, all that when we have pine cones and we could use those for fire starters? I don't know what happened there. But they do start a good fire. Number four. When you hear someone clapping their hands outside your house, okay, what does that mean? They're trying to fetch their dog who just ran through your yard. They are announcing the opening of their store. They are asking to come in to your house. Yeah, it's our doorbell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever you hear anybody outside and they go, you know, go answer. It's actually pretty sleep. It's just a clapper, yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know. We actually had a doorbell and nobody ever used it. So, there you go. When you go into a store in our hometown in Uruguay, you can expect the clerk to speak in Spanish or Portuguese, be dressed in Middle Eastern clothing, be dressed like a gaucho with a Uruguayan cowboy. Kind of random, isn't it? It is B. Yes. She goes for the random ones. Yeah. Our stores on the Brazil side are owned by Lebanese. And so they all the clerks are in Eastern garb, and in the middle of the day they play their own music. So you go into the store and you hear Eastern music playing in Northern Uruguay. Sort of strange. Anyway, that's the way it is. It's fun to be in different cultures, you know, there's different things that happen. I often try to look at this culture through a foreigner's eyes, you know. And it's been interesting with my high schoolers this year, because they're kind of, you know, they came up for public school. They had never, I mean, the last time my son's a sophomore in high school, so he was in fifth grade when we were in the U.S. 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And so, you know, high school is, if you step right into high school the first day, like my daughter Sarah, second period, you know, they came on the intercom and they had the announcements, and then they said the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, you know, she didn't know the words to the Pledge of Allegiance. She didn't know where to look for the Pledge of Allegiance. She didn't know where to put her hand. And so she's feeling pretty uncomfortable, you know. She's standing up and everybody's looking at her like, you know, where is this person from? Another planet? You know, they don't even know how to say the Pledge of Allegiance. So she was faking it, but it's a little uncomfortable. If you ever see a third culture kid, you know, in your school, it's a good idea to maybe try to help them out. Because third culture kids are maybe need a little of your help. Seems, you know, pretty obvious to you, but maybe to them it's not so obvious. So anyway, that's some of the things you have to go through when you change countries, isn't it? Good. I'm going to keep going here. I want to tell you a story. Last night I mentioned that we have a cell church. In fact, on the way over here tonight, I was listening to the radio, and I heard somebody announcing that tomorrow they're going to be talking about cell churches. So I guess that's something that's happening here. Is that something that's going on? So our church, we do our evangelism through cell ministry. And what that means is it's another word for house churches. We have house churches, and people meet out. We have 3 people from our church in any given house church, but that's it. Anybody else who comes is from outside of the church. So it's very evangelistic. And my wife started a house church with a lady out in the little town where we live. And this is her. Her name is Katja. They're retired. And Katja sells raviolis in the summertime. She makes raviolis. She makes 3 kinds, ham, cheese, and something like spinach. It's called selga. This is their home. Her husband is some sort of a car mechanic, auto body mechanic. So he bangs on cars. And they come out looking worse than they did when they go in. But anyway, that's beside the point. And Katja sells raviolis. Let's see, I can't always remember this. She makes 25, she sells 25 raviolis for a dollar. She makes 3,000 raviolis a day. She's on her feet 6 to 8 hours to do that. She also cleans houses. She's a 77-year-old lady. She has to do this, and her husband also has to work on his cars because their retirement pension is about $75 a month. Because Uruguay is a socialist country and there's not a lot of money when it's all divided up amongst the people. So they make a very low retirement wage. So this is what they do. And they'll probably do it as long as they possibly can. But they do it with a lot of joy. And it's kind of fun to see her do it. My wife went over one day and said, okay, let's check you out. How do you do this? And so there's the green stuff. Which is my least favorite of the 3, but it's also the cheapest. And so, actually, I'm trying to think here. Yeah, this is her kitchen, and my wife is standing right at the back door in this picture on the right. So the front door is right ahead. You can see the front door there? So that's how big this kitchen dining room is, and there's a fireplace right behind her. So she, you know, makes them up, and she has a press, rolls out the dough, puts the selga in it, rolls them up, has her cutter. You know, she just, probably many of you could make raviolis. I don't know, it would be a real challenge for me, but they had a farewell for us just before we left, and about 12 ladies came to that farewell, it was really an amazing thing, because when this all started, they had no one. And it was just my wife and Katja, and there wasn't anybody else that lived out there to invite, and so they just started up their own cell group. And the first five Tuesdays that they met, no one came. But they kept meeting, and they kept praying, and eventually the sixth meetings, one person came. And that went on for about 3 months, and they get one or two. The thing that made them an amazing team is that Katja is kind of like a bloodhound. You know, somebody would come to a meeting, and the next day Katja would be on the phone or on their doorstep, you know, after them. And just kind of encouraging them to come back. And, you know, she was kind of like a bloodhound. And that's how I think this cell group really started to grow. And so my wife, Katja's very boisterous, loud, kind of a hard woman. She's had a hard life. My wife's kind of, you know, more quiet and timid. But I was amazed at how those two worked together for the expansion of the gospel. You know, sometimes we pick people that are like us. But I think maybe we don't always have to look at somebody that's just like us. Maybe we need to even pick people that aren't like us, because there's more strength when there's diversity in the group. So anyway, just, you know, this verse, I think you know it. It's Ecclesiastes. It says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord that has three strands is not quickly broken. So at the end of our time, this little group that started out with zero was eight ladies strong. And at the farewell, we had their husbands come. We had an asado, which is kind of like a Uruguayan barbecue. And then four of those ladies went on to prepare to be baptized in our church. In a cell church, they can attend the house church for up to a year without even ever going to church. It's just, it seems to work best that way, because there's a lot of preconceived ideas about church in Uruguay and what it is and isn't. And so somebody's way more apt to come to your house than they are to come to church. And so that's why we're using cell ministry. You will find a lot of missionaries using cell churches these days. And it's right on your doorstep, too. In fact, the church we work with out of Bogota, Colombia, is in Miami already. And their goal is to have their church in every single country in the world. So it won't be long before you'll be hearing about cell churches. In fact, tune your radio in tomorrow morning. You can hear all about it. Because it's kind of a wave that's coming your way. And you'll find out more about cell ministry in the years to come. It's an effective way to evangelize. So any questions up to this point? Yes?
That woman you said, there was 70-some?
Yes, 77.
$75 a month. What happens when they can no longer work on cars and make ravioli? How do they survive?
Yeah, they're family members, hopefully. The family unit, even though it's really fractured in Uruguay, there's a very keen sense of children taking care of their aging parents. And that's true of most of Latin America. So, like, I don't know if you've known anybody from Latin America here in the U.S. Anybody ever met anyone? If they're working, they're almost always sending a check. They're sending part of their salary back to South America. That's just pretty much what they plan to do when they get here. So, yes.
Home experience, do they sit around and like read part of the Bible and talk about what it means to them, or how? What's the normal format?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. It depends, but like when we start a cell, we set up empty chairs. This is sort of symbolic, but we'll set up empty chairs and we'll pray for the person who's going to sit in that chair. And so it's kind of a step of faith, praying faith that, you know, God will send people to this cell group. And the idea is when there are just Christians there, they talk about the Sunday morning sermon. There's a handout at the end of every service that we have on Sunday. And it's just questions, you know, to talk over the sermon. And then if there is a non-believer there, if there's an invite there, they don't talk about the sermon. They have prepared a message for salvation, leading someone to the Lord. Or they might just use a topic. You know, they might talk about, you know, what do we do with our anger? Or what do we do with being separated, you know, from our spouse? Or when our children leave home, or things like that. You know, they'll pick kind of a neutral topic, and they'll discuss that topic. So, and then we have celebrations. We have women's celebrations once every 2 months. Most all the cell groups will go to the church, and that might be the first time that anybody in a given cell has been to our church, not at a service, but just at one of these celebrations. And that's just kind of it's a very lively ladies' meeting. You know, there's a lot of singing, and usually someone will share the gospel there as well. And then we have men's celebrations. And that's usually a little more low-key, and like we've used things like fishing trips, you know, going in construction projects, working on our church, you know, that kind of thing. But just anything to get people into the cell group. So, yeah, thanks. Anybody else? Good. All right, I want to show you one other thing. And that is mate. This is mate. This is a mate cup. It's really just a glorified gourd. You can see this where the stem attached to this one. And all of them, if you just flip it over, you can see that. And they just decorate it up a bit. This one's been cured, and I've used it quite frequently for drinking mate. Mate's tea. This is a straw. It's not a pipe, like some people think, but it's a straw, and actually you can pay anywhere from $2 to $50 for one of these, depending on what it's made of. But it's a straw that keeps the tea out of your mouth. Okay, that's what these holes are for. So you put the tea in this is the tea, and you put this in. Put this tea in the mate cup. You fill it up. This is green tea. And here, you can just pass it around if you like. And when you get it all filled up, you insert this into the tea. You kind of do it like this. There's a whole way to do this, but anyway, you put this in. And then you just leave it like this. Two things you don't ever do with mate is you don't stir it. I did that one time, and they about died. And the other thing you don't do is tip it, you know, because they'll laugh at you. So you just leave it like this, okay? And then this guy, the guy that brought the mate, has a thermos, okay? And his thermos has a cool little clicky top on it, you know? You've probably seen those tops. This one doesn't. It's pretty old. But anyway, the guy's called the keeper of the thermos. Huh, how about that? And he's the one that starts it. He will pour the hot water in the thermos, out of the thermos into here. And then he'll drink this, and he'll drink it dry. Okay? So it's a fair amount of liquid. And then he'll fill it up again, and he passes it to you. And you just take it and drink it. Don't tip it. Don't move it. Okay? And you drink it, and then you pass it back. You drink it dry. And then I fill it up again, and I pass it to you. Okay? But it's much more user-friendly. We're all together in a circle, okay, and just kind of close. And you share the same straw. You probably picked that up. It's okay. You know, nothing's ever happened in 4 years, at least. And this is very important to our culture. It's actually not just Uruguay. It's southern Brazil, Uruguay, Argentina, and Paraguay. Those four countries.
Would you like to have that experience with us tonight, maybe?
Drink some mate? Sure. It's kind of bitter, and I've been at churches where we have shared this, but this mate is getting kind of old, and so it's strong. It's even strong for me, and not that I'm Mr. You know, know-it-all, but I'm used to the taste a little bit, but that stuff is, it's getting pretty bad. But I found some other mate in Cleveland, Ohio. I bought a bag for $3, so and it's the size of 5 pounds of sugar, so it's pretty cheap. You know, this will go you about 2 hours. About 2 hours. So, but if you think about it, you go into a new country, you go into a new culture, you have to look at what do people do. What do they do here? How do I identify with them? Well, one way in our country is to drink mate. It's just, if you go into the store, you see just a whole row of mate. There's a whole row of teas to drink. This stuff is grown up in the province of La Misión in Argentina, which is where the movie Mission was filmed. It's up by Iguazu Falls. And there's tea plantations up there, and that's where they grow the tea for this. So to tell you the truth, you would be kind of insulting them if you didn't take this, you know. So you don't want to do that. So, might as well just join in and take it and drink it. And so that's what we've done. You would be amazed. In the morning, everybody, all the guys in Uruguay look just like this. This is what they look like. And you know they're Uruguayan, and they're drinking mate, and they'll drink it probably for 4 or 5 hours in the morning. It has caffeine in it, so it gives you a little, you know, buzz. And I have seen some of the most amazing things with guys like this. Like, the thing that I think I always am amazed at is most guys get around on a motorcycle. You know, they'll have a little 50cc, 75cc motorcycle. Well, this goes with them. So, you know, they've got one hand for the throttle and one hand for the mate. And then they add to it, you know, like, time to go to school, 2 kids on the gas tank, and if they have to take the wife, you know, to work, she's on the back, and then the biggest kid is on the way back. So I've seen 5 kids on a 50cc, 5 people on a 50cc motorcycle going down the street with potholes everywhere, and the man has his mate in his hand. And I've never seen them dump one either, so it's amazing. They climb ladders like this. They, you know, roof. They put up walls. They do stucco. They'll do everything, you know, just drinking mate. So, you know, we're asked to be all things to all people. And sometimes I think, you know, for missionaries, we just have to look for cultural signs. You know, how can we be all things to Uruguayans? And drinking mate is one way to say, we like you. We like your culture. We like what you do. We think this is a cool thing you do with mate. And so we want to know how to do it. And I've crossed a few bridges asking people how to drink mate, how to prepare it, how to make an asado, how to prepare it, what spices do they use. Asado is our barbecue. You think about here. If someone had come to this country, what would you be sure that they learn to do? What? What?
Not carry
the mate. There you go. Okay, but what do you do that they would need to know? What? They need the Pledge of Allegiance, yes. They need to learn the Pledge of Allegiance, and they need to work on their English. What else? What about coffee? No, what about Starbucks? I mean, wouldn't it be fairly important to, take them to a Starbucks? Yeah? And there's a lot to know about a Starbucks. I mean, it's not just coffee. You know? There's latte, there's cappuccinos, frappuccinos. You know, can you imagine to somebody who's just learning English? You know? what's a chino what? You know, I mean. So, you know, you'd need to take them and show them around Starbucks. Yeah? Exactly, yeah. Except we have McDonald's. Yeah, that's all we have. So you'd have to, you know, take them to a few other restaurants maybe. But you'd need to take them to Walmart. They would want to go to Walmart. They would love to shop at Walmart. But Walmart would be very overwhelming. It's so many things in one store. Yeah, when we came back this time, we took about 45 minutes to buy a tube of toothpaste. I mean, do you know how many kinds of toothpaste there are right now? I mean, there's, you know, whiten your teeth, brighten your teeth, you know, get rid of the cavities, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. And that's not the only thing. If you walk, you know, into the bedding aisle, you know, I mean... Have you ever thought about how crazy it is? I mean, it's just... or take them to a Home Depot, you know. This is how we build our houses. Yeah. You know, that would be a real cultural thing to do. So, anyway, bridging the gap between cultures. I hope you can try to do that. You know, you don't have to go to a foreign country to do that. There's foreigners coming here all the time. And by the year 2050, they say there's going to be more Hispanic people. I think they're saying like 30% of the population could be Hispanic by then. That's a lot of people. That means in this room, a third of you would be Hispanic in 30 years, or 40 years. So, you know, it's coming. And that's what this country's been about for a long time, you know. It's just been about... a good place to live, immigration, where people from all nations can live together. So, okay. Any questions up to that point? I think we're about done here. Last night I did talk about, if I've got any time here, I talked about two other ministries that we've been involved in. We've been doing marriage encounters. And I mentioned that last night. How many of you have ever been to a marriage encounter? Oh, great. How long ago? What church? Yes.
Actually, it wasn't actually a church. It's training as a marriage training.
Yeah, yeah. Weekend to Remember.
I went through Netflix, actually went twice.
Yeah. Those are good.
It's been about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. We went to one of those one time. Did you go to a marriage encounter? Engaged encounter? Huh. What's that?
Through the Catholic Church.
Okay.
For the whole weekend.
Yeah?
Guys in one section, girls in another section.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. Well, we use encounters, we use marriage encounters in Uruguay. The SIM mission also... They are in Uruguay. They have a missionary that's been there about 10 years. And he has set this whole thing up, so they have this in motion. And so we've been sending people to marriage encounters for the last 4 years. And the marriage encounter is two times a year. It's in Montevideo, in the capital. And we have, like, marriage has turned out to be a tremendous ministry, if you can say it that way, a tremendous testimony for the Lord, because in our town, we have, you can get married in our town every other week on Thursdays, okay? So every other Thursday from 10 to 2, there's a garage that's open beside the Justice of the Peace, and you can go there and get married. And our church, in turn, will go to the garage, as we call it, but we'll come back and have a celebration at church, and we also have a religious ceremony. And that's where we invite the family of the people getting married. And we use it as a testimony to what God is doing in their lives and the way He's brought them together and convicted them of living together without being married, and that they make the decision to get married, to glorify God. And so it's been a pretty neat testimony. And Marriage Encounters are the same way. Marriage Encounters, if you're not familiar with the weekend, you go in on, you start on Fridays and you come out Sunday evening. It's a time for the couple to be together the whole time. And usually what we do is we will send a couple from our church, somebody who's maybe I want to train or just want them to live the experience, or maybe somebody who's having a problem in their marriage. And we send two couples. The second couple is somebody who is not a Christian, either one or both. And so we've used it both ways. We've used it to strengthen Christian marriages and to witness to people who aren't Christians. And it's been good. It's been a really good ministry. We've had some good success with Marriage Encounter. We've had people come back. Most everyone comes back excited after a Marriage Encounter weekend. They're just excited that they've got hope for their marriage, you know, that maybe they can make this work and they can, you know, if they're having problems, they can get help. So it's been a pretty exciting thing. And we've had unsaved people that come back really excited, too. And there's a follow-up to Marriage Encounters, so it's an ideal way to get into somebody's home and to share more of the gospel with them, because you meet with them five times after the actual weekend. So it's a pretty handy little tool. I don't know. In fact, there is an Alliance church in this district that's working with Marriage Encounter. We heard about it the other day. I don't know which one it is. But if you ever have a couple or somebody who are having problems or don't know the Lord, you could maybe invite them to a Marriage Encounter. You'd have to sponsor them probably. In Uruguay, that means $60 for the weekend. I don't know what it means in the United States. Probably more than 60. But anyway, we'd ask them not to pay anything the first time that they go. But it's a tremendous weekend. The way it's set up is there are four couples that are testimony couples, and they share like struggles they've been through in their marriage. And it can be very emotional, but it's usually something that someone in the audience can identify with. And there's usually 25 new couples there on every Marriage Encounter. One of the topics is, I think what it is. Oh, love is a decision. You know, being in love is a decision, and the whole idea behind that. We have a romantic dinner on Saturday night. Sunday morning, we do some other romantic things, and then Sunday afternoon is a testimony time. And you'd be amazed. It's such a blessing to hear what God does in the lives of these people. All through the weekend, they're receiving correspondence. They're getting letters from their family, their kids, their mom and dad, whoever. We've done all that background work for them. There's somebody, there's a prayer room that goes on the whole 48 hours of the weekend. People just are constantly praying for these 25 couples. Sunday night, there's actually, before they leave, there's a, what's it called in English? Communion. And there's an actual wedding ceremony if somebody wants to get married. And then we have a reception for them. So it's all rolled up into one great big weekend. But it's really a pretty neat thing, a pretty great ministry. We try to, just look for ways to reach out to people who don't know the Lord. That's been the main thing. Uruguay is very, very difficult. It's the kind of place where you make one step forward and about three back. You know, we get resistance all the time. Like, actually, after Marriage Encounters, sometimes people will come back, and that week, something will happen. You know, in their family, a tragedy, something will go on, which we usually feel is spiritual in nature. And the same thing after our spiritual encounter weekends, all kinds of stuff can happen. I don't know, but greater is he who is in you than he is in the world, right? So, you know, just there's no reason to stop. There's just a reason to keep going, even if the battle is raging at times. So got a couple of minutes for questions, maybe. That's about what we have. Anybody have anything they'd like to ask me? Yes.
Do they have a lot of orphanages down there? I know somebody who adopted from South America. I'm not sure where, though.
Yeah. To my knowledge, I'm not aware of any orphanages in Uruguay. It is a socialist country, and it's quite strongly socialist. So most everyone is kind of on the same page economically. But there were orphanages in Peru, Bolivia, Guatemala, Colombia. A lot of Latin American countries have orphanages. So, yeah, it's a very common thing. The Alliance has an orphanage in a couple of countries, too. Chile and Peru, for sure. Maybe more. Yeah, I was in a church not too long ago, and they had adopted a Guatemalan baby. It's just absolutely incredible. She had paid $30,000 for that child when it could probably be done for $300.
Culture, or for you, did you feel like you had a desire, but you might not have the ability, so you needed God's help to push you in that direction? Just maybe tell that story for 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay. I think it happens differently for different people, but in my case and my wife's case would be different, quite different. But I think, like, if you enjoy studying other cultures and, you know, you find it interesting and you'd like to go visit somewhere, I think that's a good start, you know, maybe just do that. And if you get to a short-term missions trip is another thing that, or even a teen thing like to Mexico in the summer, go do it. You know, try to get that first experience and see what you think of it. See if you like it or not. But I think the other thing is, like, I mentioned last night that we did a Chinese ministry in the Bronx when we were in seminary our last year, because we did not take the missions track. There was a missions track and a pastoral track at Alliance Theological Seminary. And we were both in the pastoral track, we meaning my wife and I. But the last year, after we had returned to Alliance Theological to finish our seminary, we did take a church in the Bronx that was Chinese, and that was a really good transcultural experience for us. We really liked it, and we liked being with the people. We felt comfortable. In fact, we went to Toronto Linguistic School, and we studied Cantonese, which is a Chinese dialect. My wife wanted to go to China, but we did not really have the language ability to learn Chinese. It's a very, very difficult language to learn. So, anyway, just those things, like if you think God's leading you that way, or if you feel like God is saying to you, you know, write in Scripture, you know, when you read something, if you, like, go ye into all the world and preach the gospel, or if you read, you know, Acts and it gets you really excited, or you just think, wow, you know, this is great stuff. Those guys, those are first missionaries, you know, in Acts 13. You know, if you just like reading that, or you like reading books, biographies about missionaries who have gone to different countries. I think God uses, you know, all those experiences to kind of direct you, yeah, and into that kind of a mission and a ministry. So, other thing is languages, you know. You do need to learn a foreign language, usually. So, if that's something you like and you like studying languages, that might be another natural indication that God would like to use you as a missionary. I don't know. What else than that? Do any of you feel called to missions? Anybody here? That they're aware of? No? Well, maybe we should just end and pray that way. How about we just end tonight and pray? Lord, I just thank you for this evening and this evening with this church. And Lord, I thank you for the families represented here. And I thank you, Lord, for the young people. Lord, I just pray that you would call them into ministry and even as missionaries. Lord, I just pray that they would sense your calling and be obedient to it. And casting away the fear that they might have of, and even their parents might have of living in another country. And I just pray, Lord, that they would just be obedient to what they're hearing you say to them and that they would respond. And just call people from this very congregation, Lord, into your ministry and into missionary work. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
If you want to keep in prayer for Peter in a consistent manner and the country of Uruguay, just write his name in your Bible, Peter Marshall, Uruguay. And he has pictures back there of his family. Just take it, one per family, if you will be faithful to pray for them. Okay? That's not a souvenir thing, but please do that. And I think we're going to be dismissed right now. The young people with Peter to the youth.